Hello and welcome to a podcast about murder. I'm Jem and I'm here with Freya, as always, to discuss another case that, while not officially considered a murder, has sparked many theories and conspiracies.
Whoa. In the last take, you said that I was wondrous. And this take, you've all given
right.
me no
you want me
adjective
to redo
at
it?
All. No, it's fine. Go on.
Well, I thought maybe that was tripping me up. So I was like, I'll cut out the words and maybe I'll be able to say discuss like a normal human being. Anyway, today we'll be discussing the mysterious case of the Easdal woman. As a warning to listeners, we will be discussing a case that involves a person being burned alive. So if that is distressing to you in any way, then give this episode a miss.
I love that you said, if this is distressing to you in any way, like, it couldn't possibly be distressing that someone would be burned alive.
On the 29th of November 1970, a father and his two daughters were out for a family hike in the Isdalen Valley, which is situated just outside of the town of Bergen, Norway. This is a mountainous region. Its name, Isdalen, literally translates to Ice Valley, but it has earned the nickname Death Valley due to the fact that it was a popular suicide spot in the Middle Ages, and several hiking accidents have occurred there in more recent times. The family outing took a dark turn when the elder of the two girls discovered the charred remains of a human body. The front of the woman's body was badly burned, to the point where her face was unrecognizable. Her arms were held stiffly in front of her chest in a boxer position, which is apparently a typical pose for victims of immolation. The smell of burned flesh lingered in the air.
Immolation?
Yeah, being burned alive.
Wow, is that the word? I love learning new words.
I wasn't sure, because it's a word that I have heard more in French. And I looked it up, because I literally me just Googling, what do you call someone who's been burned alive? Death by burning?
The, like, FBI are going to be very interested in your search history.
The father immediately contacted the police, who arrived on the scene as soon as possible, armed with metal detectors and sniffer dogs. Police noted the bizarre nature of the scene. The woman's front was badly burned, yet her back was relatively unscathed. In spite of these injuries, there was nothing at the scene that could have caused such burns. No campfire or fuel canister lying nearby. Furthermore, several items, presumably belonging to the woman, had been carefully placed around the body. These items included pieces of clothing, a jumper, a scarf, and nylon stockings, a purse, a matchbox, a broken umbrella, a silver spoon, a bottle of liqueur, a burned plastic passport cover, a pair of rubber boots, a watch and some jewellery, which were earrings and a ring.
I don't think I could have imagined a more random
set
of objects than that.
And yet they're not weird enough that it's like, this is clearly meant to be weird. It's not like a Barbie doll, a clown mask. It's like these are everyday items, but a collection that is so incongruous.
Right.
Traces of burned paper were also found strewn around the body, as well as a petrol-drenched fur hat. Not only was the woman completely unidentifiable due to the extent of her facial injuries, but all of the labels and logos had been removed from her clothing and accessories. Investigators estimated her to be around 5'4.5", or 164 centimetres, and between 25 and 30 years old. They couldn't tell how long she had been at the site of her discovery, or when she had died. An autopsy would reveal that the unknown woman had died from a combination of carbon monoxide poisoning, as traces of soot on the inside of her lungs revealed that she had been burned alive, and incapacitation by phenobarbital. Analyses of her blood and stomach revealed that she had consumed over 50 sleeping pills, though they had not had time to fully enter her bloodstream by the time of her death. Coroners also noted her distinctive dental work, as she had a golden crest covering many of her teeth. Her face and neck showed signs of bruising that could have occurred as the result of a blow or a fall.
So, lots of information.
But at the
none
same
of
time,
it, like,
enough.
Leading anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like an overwhelming amount of useless information at this point.
Yeah.
As in terms of figuring out who she is. Their first break in the case occurred 3 days after the discovery of the woman's body. Police discovered two unclaimed suitcases at the Bergen train station. The contents of these suitcases added a further layer of confusion to the case. The cases contained a Norwegian roadmap, a steel spoon, a sewing kit from Geneva, a shoe bag from Rome, several wigs, makeup, clothing, shoes, eczema cream, prescription-free glasses, as well as a pair of sunglasses. They also found 5 100 Deutschmark notes sewn into the lining of one of the bags, as well as Norwegian kroner and coins from Belgium, Britain, and Switzerland. They also found a notebook with a series of codes written in blue ink.
Okay. I'm thinking, not to preempt you, but I'm thinking spy straight away.
Seems pretty likely at this point.
Spy is my go-to. I have heard a bit about this case. But I've never listened to any like really long, like long form, in depth kind of thing about it, or read anything long about it. I think I might have. It was BuzzFeed Unsolved, maybe.
Yeah, they've done an episode on it, which I have watched, but it was a while ago.
That might have been where I heard of it.
And there's apparently a good podcast out that was done by the BBC and the Norwegian broadcasting company that goes very in-depth and talks to investigators and stuff, but I haven't, unfortunately, had the time to listen to it. But I think if you're interested in this case, you should definitely check that out, from what I read. But yeah, it's a very... So far, all of these items sort of tend to point in the direction of spy to me. We'll get a bit more into the theories later.
Yeah.
Police were able to connect these bizarre items to the victim thanks to a partial fingerprint on the lens of the sunglasses that was a match for the Isdal woman. However, these items didn't shed any more light on her identity, as any identifying signs had been removed, including the sticker on the eczema cream that would have given both the doctor and the patient's names. However, there was one item that gave police a lead, a plastic bag from Oscar Rodvet's footwear store, located in Stavanger. Apologies for my Norwegian pronunciation. Police interviewed the owner's son, Rolf Rodvet, who told investigators that he had sold a woman the same blue rubber boots that had been found at the crime scene. He remembered the woman who had purchased the boots. She stood out due to her poor English and the amount of time she had spent in the shop, asking a lot of questions before making up her mind. He and his colleagues provided investigators with their first physical description of the woman. She was of an average height, she had a round face with dark brown eyes and dark hair. The shop workers also noted that the woman had a strange smell about her that they would later identify as garlic.
That is bizarre. You mentioned the poor English. Is this not happening in Norway?
Well, this is in Norway, but I assume she doesn't speak Norwegian. So she would be speaking English to them.
So English was how she was trying to communicate with people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is a detail, I think we'll come back to it, but that small detail makes me question the spy theory, because I feel like a spy would have a high level of English.
That is a point.
But I guess we'll get back to that. Police decided to ask hotels in the area if a woman matching this description had spent any amount of time there. Sure enough, a receptionist at the Hotel St. Svithun told police that a dark-haired woman who spoke poor English had checked in under the name Finella Lork from Belgium. The name Finella Lork wasn't found on any of the hotel registries in Bergen. However, they were finally able to crack the code that they had found in the notebook. The entries referred to dates and places where the woman had stayed. Using this information and handwriting analyses, police were able to trace her movements throughout Norway in the days before her death. So, for example, an entry marked 030B95 referred to a stay in Bergen from October 30th to November 5th.
Okay.
The Isdal woman used the following identities while in Norway. Elizabeth Lynn Horf. Apologies for that. Claudia Nielsen, Genevieve Lancier, Alexia Zana Merchez, Claudia Tilt, Vera Jarl, and Finella Lork. As hotels would have required identification upon check-in, investigators determined that the Isdal woman must have possessed up to 8 passports, although never recovered these forged documents. Police noted that while her birth date and occupation often changed on the registry forms, she consistently provided her nationality as Belgian. She filled in the forms in either German or French. In spite of this, when investigators sent the list of identities to the Belgian authorities, they claimed that not one of them referred to an actual Belgian citizen on record.
That's quite bizarre.
It's very mysterious. Police found the woman had stayed in the following hotels under these names. Genevieve Lancier from Louvain stayed in Viking Hotel Oslo from the 21st to the 24th of March 1970. Claudia Tilt, from Brussels, stayed in Hotel Bristol, Bergen, from the 24th to the 25th of March. Claudia Tilt again stayed in the Hotel Scandia in Bergen from the 25th of March to the 1st of April. Claudia Nielsen from Ghent stayed in KNA Hotellet Stavanger from the 29th to the 30th of October. Alexia Zahn Merchez from Ljubljana stayed in Neptune Hotel Bergen from the 30th of October to the 5th of November. Vera Jarl from Antwerp stayed in Hotel Bristol, Trondheim from the 6th to the 8th of November. Finella Lork stayed in St. Svithun Hotel, Stavanger from the 9th to the 18th of November. Ms. Leenhof stayed in Hotel Rosenkrantz, Bergen from the 18th to the 19th of November. And Elisabeth Leenhof from Ostend stayed in Hotel Hordeheim in Bergen from the 19th to the 23rd of November. So there's a lot of movement in quite a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Which we'll come back to. And there's even cases where she would switch hotel in the same city in quite a in a short amount of time as well, which is interesting.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's that definitely suggests someone who's on the run in a sense.
Yeah, or trying not to be found.
Right.
As the police still knew next to nothing about this woman, they tried to get a better idea about the kind of person she was from eyewitness accounts of people who had interacted with her at the places she had stayed. Most of these accounts came from people who worked in hotels or restaurants. Their accounts depicted a confident, if eccentric, woman. She reportedly asked to change rooms on multiple occasions in hotels. She was seen dining alone, an act which drew attention to her simply because it was a rare occurrence, although witnesses stated that she herself hadn't seemed at all bothered or self-conscious about sitting in a restaurant by herself. There were accounts of the Isdal woman talking on the phone with someone in German. While staying at the Neptune Hotel in Bergen, a maid had reportedly tried to enter her room, only to find the door blocked by a table on the other side. She was also seen meeting with a grey-haired man at the Neptune Hotel, although the two reportedly just sat opposite one another in silence in the dining room, before she slipped him a piece of paper. Here, she was also reportedly seen by a waitress sitting next to two German Navy officers, although not visibly interacting with them. The Isdal woman relocated to the Hotel Rosenkrantz in Bergen, where she stayed from the 18th to the 19th of November. On this occasion, a maid entered the room to change the sheets. She came across a strange scene. The Isdal woman was sitting on the bed, and a blonde-haired man sat on the couch. When the maid explained that she had come to change the sheets, the Isdal woman silently moved from the bed. The two remained silent for the rest of the time the maid was present. Which is kind of a weird thing to come across, but...
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand,
yeah,
I can't pinpoint an exact experience that I've had, but I know that I find it awkward if someone sort of comes in, like, for example, a maid, like if you're in a hotel, and then maybe they want to clean or they want to do something.
Yeah.
And what would you do other than sit in silence?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, also, even if I were having a private conversation that wasn't sensitive in any way, I would still feel awkward just talking as if the person wasn't there.
Definitely, definitely. Like, because it's almost feels, I mean, it isn't really rude, but it sort of feels rude to talk while there's, yeah, a person there who isn't part of the conversation in a weird way. But like, definitely if I'm having the vast majority of my conversations, I would pretty much stop talking just cause. Just
yeah.
Because it feels, I don't know. So I don't think that's super weird. However, it would have maybe felt weird for the maid, but I'm not sure.
I guess maybe you pick up on a vibe that's a bit strange. It's not that weird, but I think it's just indicative of her personality as being like, well, I want to do this and I don't really care what you think of me.
Yeah.
And if I don't want to talk and have a conversation with the maid in the room, then I'm not going to do it. But I would be like, oh yeah, sure, come in. Whereas,
oh, yeah,
it seems here, maybe she didn't, and that's what's a bit weird.
Yeah, okay, yeah. No, I get that. I would definitely act like the person existed.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Sorry, if I got a notification during that on my phone about Boris Johnson.
Great.
He's just taking over today. Anyway, go on.
The Isdal woman then moved to the Hotel Hordeheim, where she stayed from the 19th of November to the 23rd of November. On the registration form, she radically changed her handwriting. During this time, she was seen at a furniture shop in Bergen with a young, dark-haired man with whom she appeared to be having an argument. Although witnesses reported these strange encounters to the police in their testimonies, they were left out of the official report. The last time the Isdal woman was officially seen alive was on the 23rd of November, when she checked out of her room at the Hotel Hordaheimen. This meant that there was a significant amount of time between her last sighting and the discovery of her body, which investigators were unable to fill. Due to the results of the autopsy and the lack of response to the composite sketch that had been sent to Interpol, the case was determined to be a suicide and closed relatively quickly.
What? A suicide? We talked about this on the Sabrage thing. Like, a suicide for a burning. It would just never... And with the other injuries, but there are other injuries to her body.
But she could have just been thrown back, I think, by the power of the flame, it's maybe assumed. Or she'd fallen from somewhere.
It's still a leap for me.
Yeah, but I will say that she had ingested a lot of pills as well, which is maybe more in line with suicide.
Yeah, I guess so.
The Isdal woman was buried on the 5th of February 1971 in a zinc coffin so that she could be easily exhumed if necessary. Part of her jaw and tissue samples were kept in order to perform more detailed tests when science would allow for it. In the years following, several anonymous witnesses have come forward with information relating to this case. In 1991, a taxi driver stated that he had driven the Isdal woman to the Bergen railway station in the days before her death. He stated that the woman had been joined by a man before heading to the station. In 2005, a man came forward stating that he had seen the Isdal woman hiking in the Fløyen Mountains 5 days before the discovery of her body. He was 26 at the time and remembered the woman because she seemed unprepared for a serious hike, stating that she was dressed very lightly. He apparently saw two men accompanying her, following her a few steps behind. According to the witness, she seemed like she wanted to say something to him, but didn't. He explained that he had recognized her from the police sketch at the time and went to the police to report his sighting, but was apparently told to, quote-unquote, forget about it.
Okay, that's a bit weird.
Yeah. The fact of her being followed by these two, I mean, I think she was aware of them. I don't think it was like she hadn't noticed that they were following her. It seems more like they're forcing her up this mountain, which is strange. The case was reopened in 2016, and the NRK, which is Norway's government-owned broadcasting company, commissioned new sketches of the Isdal woman. A year later, in 2017, a stable isotope analysis of her teeth gave investigators more precise information about the woman's background. They determined that the woman was born in 1930, give or take about 4 years, near Nuremberg, Germany, but had spent her childhood closer to the France-Germany border. Obviously, the bizarre nature of this case has sparked many theories, which we'll get into now. Before we do, what are your personal theories, just having heard the details of the case so far?
Well, I was going with spy as for why, you know, what actually happened. I'm not 100% sure. This man is obviously part of the whole thing in some way. I don't know if he's the killer, but it does seem odd that she has this partner that she's going around with, let's say.
Yeah.
And then he disappears and she's burned alive. That seems a bit odd.
Yeah. Which seems weird that if she had committed suicide, where's this guy? Why isn't he, like, coming forward?
Right. Yes. And so that's why it's really suspicious. But also, I could buy a suicide if it wasn't for all the weird things like the items being there. That just screams... Well, somebody else is there.
Yeah, unless she was like placing them around her in some kind of like ritual.
But why? That doesn't make sense. I don't know. Yeah. That doesn't. But then you also just think, if it's somebody who's killed her and it's like some kind of spy thing, why would they leave anything at all? Like, why leave
that's the thing.
Any of these items?
Well, even if she herself is a spy and has committed suicide, because the two aren't mutually exclusive, wouldn't she just take a cyanide pill or whatever they're supposed to do? Why would you go to the...
I feel like they're way more discreet or quick or less intense ways to kill yourself, even as a regular person, let alone a spy.
Mm. Police originally determined this case to be a suicide. And I do think that's obviously a possibility. And I can see how placing the objects around her is a sort of farewell ritual that kind of makes sense. And then I do understand the ingestion of the pills goes with the suicide theory, but what I don't understand is why you would take pills and then set yourself on fire. Although that said, she does go to extreme lengths to protect her identity, and maybe it's just a precaution to like completely to make sure that her body is just completely disfigured.
That's part of the mystery, is why is her identity so important to her if she's just a regular person who is run away to commit suicide? Why stay in so many different places running around before it, and why?
Yeah,
it just doesn't add up with a plan of I'm gonna kill myself, unless you were talking about someone with maybe some pretty extreme delusions.
Yeah,
maybe someone who has like schizophrenia or something and believes they're being pursued by someone.
Well, that's what I was going to get into next, actually, so that's a good segue, is that a lot of people explain the suicide theory by stating that she must have been mentally ill. And right. That sort of relates to the next theory we're going to discuss, which is obviously the spy theory. Some people argue that she wasn't a spy, because if she was, she probably wouldn't have stood out so much. People remember her. She's very strange in her behavior. And she's not very good at not being observed, which you would think a spy would be. So many people believe that she was sort of playing out this fantasy of being an international spy, like it's some kind of elaborate dress-up game.
That is interesting.
Well, that's the thing. If she is just a normal person who is mentally ill or just living out some kind of elaborate fantasy...
Where is her family?
She must know someone in the real world who would know that this person has gone missing.
Exactly. And especially if she has ever had any documented delusions from whatever illness she might have had. When a person is like mentally ill and they're also struggling with, we're talking about people who are maybe less privileged in their lifestyle, those people might easily go missing without having the connections required to be noticed, if that makes sense. Sadly. So there are a lot of people who, because they're underprivileged and mentally ill, would disappear and then potentially know what they might not have any social connections or family who would notice. So what's interesting to me about this is a person who can afford these kinds of stays in these hotels and things like this.
The hotels, she's buying quite fashionable clothing as well, which I assume is quite expensive. She can afford, if this is a scenario where she's not a spy, she can afford believable forged documents.
Right. So what I'm saying is that this is not an underprivileged person, and therefore I find it hard to believe that she had no connections to any human beings.
Well,
can't
just exist in the world with this wealth without it coming from somewhere, be it family, friends, or work. There has to be some tie to something or someone. So the next theory we're going to explore is that she was murdered. Now, there are several theories as to why she would have been murdered, and I will say that certain elements of this case make more sense to me when viewed through the lens of murder, especially the fact that the police apparently couldn't find what started the fire in the first place. That to me is a massive indication of someone else had to be involved.
Yeah, definitely. I'd forgotten even about that aspect of the scene, because how does she, like, that makes it obvious that she's been moved from the scene of her actual death.
Yeah, or someone's come and cleaned it up. So the first theory we're going to discuss in relation to murder is obviously the fact that she may have been a spy. She had multiple currencies, multiple identities, and several disguises in her luggage, and this could all point to the fact of her being a spy. This all happened during the Cold War, and it was apparently quite common for spies to pass through Norway.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
The men she was seen with having secretive discussions could have been colleagues, perhaps. And what I found interesting was the detail that the smell of garlic can actually be a symptom of arsenic poisoning. So it's possible that in the days leading up to her death, she was being poisoned. Although
that's fascinating.
It is, but I wonder, I'm sure that would have showed up on an autopsy. But
you
maybe
would
not.
Think.
I don't have enough knowledge to be sure about that.
I can't pretend to know either, like how definitive you can be about arsenic poisoning, especially with like damage to the body. But if they were able to find other drugs, it does seem odd that they wouldn't say, oh,
well, they found
arsenic.
Other drugs because they were just undigested in her stomach.
Yeah. So, okay, yeah. So maybe it's a bit easier to find those than arsenic.
But then they did test the blood as well because they could tell that the drugs weren't fully in her bloodstream. But I found that an interesting detail.
Yeah, I didn't know that about arsenic with the garlic.
I didn't either.
I'll bear that in mind. Coming handy.
In this theory, the two men seen accompanying her up the mountain would have been her executioners. They could have been members of a rival spy organization or members of her own organization who needed to silence her for some reason. People who believe this theory will point to a detail that I actually find very compelling, which is that the movements of these Dull Women throughout Norway actually follow the secret military trials of an anti-ship missile known as the Penguin missile. And this has been proven by the release of declassified records from the Norwegian Armed Forces. So it shows that there's a correlation between the movements of these military tests and the locations visited by the Isdal woman as recorded in her diary. And that can't be a coincidence. Or if it is, it's a mad coincidence.
That would be a pretty crazy coincidence, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, of all the things. So I guess that is taking me back to that this is a real thing as opposed to a delusion. But
well, if not, if it's just a delusion, she's got to have some pretty high connections or means to know about this without being part of a spy organization.
But I'm still stuck on, okay, but if you're a spy organization and you need to kill someone, I feel like we're not going to know about it. You know, it's just going to be...
Yeah, why wouldn't you just make her disappear?
Yeah, why is she out there in that sort of like messy way with these clues around her?
That's the thing. It's almost like...
Makes sense.
It is almost like a detective novel. It's like, no, we have to have these clues so that someone somewhere could eventually unravel this mystery.
I mean, I've come up with my own theory in the last 15 seconds.
Okay, go for it.
So it's both.
Go on,
so
I'm intrigued.
She is a spy who is in a real situation, has knowledge of various, whatever it is, Cold War issues that she's been investigating or whatever, but she's also become unhinged in some way recently. Now these two guys on her tail trying to interact with her, maybe the one she's in the room with trying to gain her trust kind of thing, kind of going
figure
like,
out what's happening,
try and figure out how far she's gone into whatever problem she's encountered, and maybe they are coming for her in some way, and then she has this bizarre suicide and her laying, and the objects are then her way of going like, I'm going to try and expose what's happened to me kind of thing.
That's
with the only thing, the only objects I have, you know, I have to just leave them with my body so someone can find them. So my theory is everything is true.
But that's the thing though, about specifically about the boots, I find interesting because she would have to know that's a recent purchase in Norway.
Yeah.
And she didn't burn herself with her boots on.
Yeah.
So she would have to know that someone would be able to trace that back somewhere.
So I think this is a message. I think this is her getting all of the things that she has. This is all she has at her disposal. Maybe because isn't the label cutting just a thing they do? They don't do that. It's not about maybe that's unrelated to the death. Maybe that's about
covering
your tracks while you're alive. But the things laid out around her and all those things, maybe that's just she's like trying to expose these guys or something.
I find strange is then that because there were pieces of paper around her, which I have to assume were the forged passports. Now, is that her saying goodbye to these false identities?
There's something theatrical about that, though, that just that makes me think that maybe she was. I mean, in a sense, that's not a delusion. Then they are coming.
Yeah.
So in my theory, that's open for me. It could be either that they were tracking her down because she'd gone off the rails in some way and they were just trying to help.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, you're coming for me.
Yeah.
Or it could have been really they were coming for her.
Yeah.
And she was like, this was her trying to take control of the situation.
Mm.
And she was just quite a dramatic, independent person.
Yeah, I could see that. Many people point out that her movements seem very amateurish for a spy, and therefore think that she may have been somewhat involved in espionage, but not a fully fledged spy. It's possible that she was working as an informant, or something like this, like a sort of civilian that would pass under the radar.
Okay, but I then don't, I piece that with, like, that pattern that you said. I think she has to have known.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. If she's just work, if they're like, we need you to follow this missile, we'll give you the location. You see, you hang around being a normal person and like pass on the information.
Mm, fair enough.
Many also point out that the manner of death is far from discreet, as it likely would have been undertaken by a secret organization. So as we were saying, you know, if this is a spy thing, they would just make her disappear. They wouldn't have this elaborate crime scene.
Yeah, that's why I think something's wrong with the end of this story that isn't the natural flow of just a spy murdered.
Having said that, her death may have been intended as a message, perhaps to those she was working for.
Oh, okay. That's another...
So that's another side of it. What if the rivals
that's a,
got...
That's a possibility as well.
Yeah.
And then they would want it to be found, wouldn't they? So I guess that makes sense. I still feel like the arrangement of the objects was a bit personal to her.
Yeah. And it's the fact of taking out her earrings, doing all these like small gestures of placing them around.
Yeah, I feel like that's, I'm starting to associate that more with her as a character than someone else.
So moving on from the spy theory, I read a few other theories online that I found interesting. One theory was that the Isdal woman wasn't a spy, but a con artist of some kind, and more specifically an art thief, which would make sense with the forged documents.
Okay.
Maybe she's a forger of some kind. So in this theory, this life of crime caught up to her and ended up getting her violently killed, which is...
By some kind of organized crime unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's possible.
I see that as possible. There's not much... I guess we don't know much about her as a person to indicate that she was really into art. And the fact that she's hanging around these, like, missile sites again points in a different direction to me. But I do find that the art theory possible.
I guess I do get an organised... There is a sort of organised crime vibe to being burned. But I'm sort of still stuck on the pattern of the movements. That sort of got me hooked on the spy thing.
So the other theory that I find very cool is that she was a Nazi hunter.
Ooh, okay, I like this. Yeah. I like this, where this is going.
So we know for a fact, based on the isotope analysis of her teeth, that she grew up on the France-Germany border. So it's more than likely that she would have experienced the everyday horrors of the Second World War as a child.
Okay.
Or young teen. So whether on a personal quest for revenge or justice, a journalist seeking the truth, or even a Mossad agent, some believe that the Isdal woman was tracking down Nazis hiding in Norway. Perhaps she got too close or too reckless and had to be killed.
Hmm. It's certainly an exciting theory.
Yeah.
I still think there's things that... there's puzzle pieces here that you can't make fit into that. Mm. But I like it as a theory.
Well, that would explain why she's not... why she can't speak English, for example.
Yeah. I'd also forgotten about that as an aspect of spyness, but...
But again, the civilian thing. Maybe she's just...
part spy.
Not a fully trained spy.
Yeah. Okay.
Others point to a simpler yet sadder, in my opinion, theory. The Isdal woman was trying to escape an abusive relationship, by constantly being on the move and changing her identity.
Mm.
Her agitated state and strange behaviours could be explained by living in a constant fear of being discovered by her abuser. Going along with this theory, her abuser finally caught up to her and killed her, and this could certainly explain the violent nature of her death.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly the more... I mean, it's sad to say that it's the pedestrian theory, mm-hmm. because it's so common for that kind of situation. But again, similar to the last one, there's puzzle pieces that just aren't sort of fitting in with that, that don't make, you know, that make this case more mysterious. And I couldn't make those fit in with someone who's just fleeing.
Yeah, because then who is she meeting up with in the hotel restaurants?
And all the thing, and all the codes and the labels and stuff. I mean, you could say it's real paranoia. I guess you could say she's just sadly been so affected by this that she's got really paranoid, and so her actions are. Yeah, it's possible. But it's
what about
also...
this though? Okay.
Okay.
Here's my theory that I came up with in the past 15 seconds.
Okay.
What if she was in a relationship with a spy or someone involved in an international organization? And that's why she knows enough about it to know what to do to avoid being caught, to avoid her identity being found out, but not enough to know how to disappear completely. And that explains the amateurish aspect of it.
Right. Yeah, that's a possibility. Maybe it's like some... Maybe it's a Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah.
Maybe it's... Ah, okay. I've built on what you've... I've built on that. And I'm building it into my one as well.
Okay, go for it.
So what you said, so you can add a relationship element to this. Maybe the organization isn't coming for her. Maybe she's an informant, as you said, or like a lower level spy.
Mm.
And she's in a relationship with a spy who is actually an abusive person for whatever reason. And that could be something to do with her informing, like that her work could have led her into something where she realizes maybe the guy is dodgy.
Yeah.
Or something. And then he's like, oh, she's found out too much. And then he's coming first. So there's like a relationship element and a spy element. And that sort of fits in with amateurishness.
Because then the intimate aspect of her death scene, where of laying her objects around her, would sort of make sense regardless of how abusive this person may have been, if they genuinely had feelings for her on some level.
Yeah, it could have been them, or I tack on my death to that. So I would still say maybe it's a self-inflicted death as part of this whole thing. But both of those things are possible. But yeah. I can see how all of these things... I feel like the reason why this hasn't been solved is because it probably is quite a complicated story.
Yeah.
Like this, but...
Because then that makes sense with the fact that she has no connections in the real world. If her connections are part of this secret organization, then of course no one's going to come forward.
Totally. If all her friends and her partner is the spy people... Yeah, interesting.
It's just there's so many directions you could go with it, I guess. So the final theory I want to discuss is the one that I personally find the least convincing. That rather than a suicide or a murder, the Easdal woman's death was simply an accident.
Nah, not buying it.
In this theory, maybe she had too much to drink. There was a bottle of liqueur with her that was found. Maybe she was trying to light a bonfire to warm herself and it backfired dramatically. The reason I don't believe this is I just don't believe one can accidentally ingest 50 to 70 pills. That seems unlikely to me.
It could be a theory about the death, but it doesn't offer any answers as a theory, it doesn't offer any answers as to any of the actions prior to her death or any of the story of why she's in this situation at all. Mm. So that's why it's not very compelling to me as well.
Well, I could see it fitting in with any of the other theories that, you know, she's a spy. Maybe she's going up there to meet someone to pass on some information. Tries to light a fire and kills herself. But again, I think she would know better.
I do think it's unlikely that a spy of any reasonable quality would not have a good command of English. Because you'd think it would be one of those basic language requirements. Probably a few others, but I would think English would be one of the most effective means of communication across as many countries as possible. I'm thinking English, Spanish, French, most widely spoken.
Yeah. Chinese, I guess, but
especially
not.
Especially where they're, well, I'm thinking where, they're, where working. They're working. They're working in Europe.
Between the US and Russia, as this is the Cold War. That's the thing, though. The Cold War, you know the US is involved. You have to speak English. No matter what side of it you're on.
Yeah, it's true. And I guess that is a little bit of a stumbling block. But then I can sub in with, for spy, I can sub in informant. And that it will still make sense to me. Like, it could make, it could, I know for a fact that they give parcels of like money and things to informants to allow them to move around and things like that, and to allow them to afford to stay in the places where they need them to be. So that would solve the money issue without her having to be a high level spy. Yeah. You know, and like you said, they could have just told her the locations that they needed her at without her really knowing why.
Mm.
So if she's an informant, that would also sort of explain maybe her connections are all criminals.
Yeah.
And so none of these people would come forward again to say anything about anything.
No, that's true. So that's it for the Izdal woman. I'd actually be interested to hear your theories, you listeners out there, on this case, because I think
I did think for a second you were talking to me. I was like, bitch, I've just spent fucking 40 minutes talking about my theories. You want to hear from me again?
I don't listen to you. But no, but I would be interested in hearing what other people think about this case, because I just think there are so many approaches you could take and ways to interpret this.
There's so many little details, and it really is like, it's one of those things that feels like a jigsaw puzzle. You got to make all these pieces fit for it to work.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are also some listeners out there who probably have done more research than I have into this case and could probably offer some kind of insight, so that would also be interesting to hear. Thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to subscribe to this channel on whatever platform you listen to these on. We're also on social media. If you'd like to connect with us there, we'd love to hear from you. On Twitter at About Murder, on Instagram at A Podcast About Murder, on Facebook, it's A Podcast About Murder with no E. You can always send us an email at apodcastaboutmurder@outlook.com. And we're also on YouTube. If you search for A Podcast About Murder, you'll find us there.
Have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend.
Enjoy. I mean, it's brightening up around here in England. So I don't know how it is for everyone else, but it has been getting warmer, which has made me much, much happier. Although today is actually pretty shit, but what can you expect? Like, you don't expect consistency on this godforsaken island.
All right, I'm going to stop recording now, unless you have more to say. No. About the weather.
Okay. Bye.